What's up, Sega gamers? It's the Sega guys. Unlike others on these blocks over the years, be they generous Saturn or Dreamcast guys, we're proud to be 100% always focused on Sega. I'm Dan, the Mega Driver, and with me, my co-host, he's the said to my Dr. Abrasive, it's James. How you doing, mate?
No, that's good. I like that. Wondered where you were going to go with that one, mate. I'm 100% Team Said, which will maybe give people a hint as to where we're going to go with this one. The title doesn't immediately give it away, but I'm not bad, mate. I've been better, but I'm getting there. How's yourself?
Yeah, very good, mate. Very good. There's people watching this. This will probably be the third or fourth episode of 2023, but this is our first time back in the booth, so to speak, back recording, and it feels good, mate. It's been too long, but we had a nice little Christmas break. It's going to be weird this going out in February, us talking about Christmas and stuff now, but
that's mad.
It's mad.
Absolutely mad. It's just crazy to think that, you know, we've obviously had our first episode going out, you know, on the 9th of January. We're kind of recording this, you know, a couple of days after that's gone out, but this episode won't go out until February, so it's all very...
But the content train keeps on running, mate. We've got a great lineup for this, and the video content is going along well as well. So I'd like to thank all of our watchers for that. So really appreciate the support. This was one that we only agreed to do tonight, wasn't it? Because we had another whole other show all lined up, and then some discussions around buying a Sega Saturn were in full flow today. So I thought, you know, it's probably a good idea to put our thoughts out there, have a discussion around the pros and cons of various pieces of hardware, the various options and configurations, and, you know, let our listeners and audience, if you've been listening to us and you've been inspired to buy a Sega Saturn, hopefully this helps. If you've already got a Sega Saturn,
and there's been a few, I think Sega owes a bit of commission. You know, I think I could rattle off what, six or seven names in the community alone who have been in my DMs, who have been on the kind of timeline asking for advice. And again today, we've had more people asking for advice, people saying they've got one ready to sell that's pre-modded, and messages being sent and exchanged. So, it's great to see that, you know, we're doing a bit of kind of God's work in a way. You know, we're righting the wrongs, mate. Sega couldn't sell it in 95, we'll sell it for them in 2023.
Yeah, exactly. I wish Sega were getting the money for it, though. It's all going back to, you know, back to resellers, which is no bad thing, but... Yeah, if only it was getting this much traction back in 1995, but we digress. I thought the best place to start, mate, would be the console itself. So obviously there's various options out there. Japanese, PAL, and US versions of the console. You've got Mark 1 and Mark 2. And then, you know, if you want something a little bit different, you can go for something like the V-Saturn or the High Saturn from Victor and Hitachi, respectively. Now, I always suggest to new Saturn purchasers to go for a Japanese unit, and that's purely because you can play Saturn games in it at 60 hertz, unmodified. Now, I say unmodified because obviously you'll need one of two things. You will need a step-down converter to convert that Japanese voltage from convert that power voltage from 240 to 110. Or you'll need to replace the PSU. And I think replacing the PSU, regardless of whether you get a Japanese, PAL, US, whatever Saturn you get, I think you've got to replace the PSU. There was a conversation that Simon Locke was having on Twitter about half a year ago, and it sticks with me in my mind, as he said, any Sega Saturn that hasn't had its PSU replaced is basically just parts.
Really?
Yeah. I was looking at a lot of listings actually on eBay, and obviously because we were talking to Jeff on Twitter about what the best approach is, and I wanted to see what, you know, the cheapest Saturn you could get is, and a lot of them were saying 40, the very cheap ones, and I was thinking, well, they're the drives has gone, so that's when you get a cheap Saturn and you replace it with the drive of an ODE, which we'll come on to later. But a lot of them were saying there's video corruption. the drive's not spinning, there's audio corruption, and a few of them even said, from what I understand, it's leaky capacitors on the power supply. And apparently all sorts of problems can arise from the power. I mean, the power supplies are they're getting up to next year, the first wave Saturns will be 30 years old next December.
Oh, mate, I don't think my mind will be able to handle sitting here recording a say. I mean, it was bad enough whenever we did the Mega Drive 30th anniversary, like a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
The kind of first season of the podcast, but to be doing a 30th anniversary of Sega Saturn, I think we'll just. I'll be like the bad Superman sitting in the bar just drinking away, because that'll just destroy me, honestly. It's like, oh my word, no. But I, as you're saying, mate, these PSUs are coming up for 30 years old now, so it's, I mean, I know kind of like on the kind of Dreamcast side, I know whenever you put a GDMU, and that's a tangent, but it's relevant, whenever you put a GDMU in, you've got no draw on a 12-volt rail anymore, so you get excessive heat. So, you know, Volta, Lord Volta, you know, he's everybody in the mod community, in the retro community knows who Volta is, and he really, like, advocates recapping the PSU rather than going down. He ripped the Dream PSU to absolute pieces. Someone came on and says, what about a Pico PSU by Chris 2600? And he said, yeah, you know, I think he said those were okay, but again, Chris 2600 only designs the schematic. It's still, someone still has to put the board together. Mm-hmm. So you're relying on that kind of aspect being done properly. But he says you recap the power supply and then you remove the 12-volt regulator to reduce heat. Now, Darren Boz on Twitter, good friend of mine personally, he did that. He recapped his PAL PSU, removed the 12-volt regulator. And apparently the 12-volt regulator on the Dreamcast PAL PSU is actually flipped, so it's actually harder to get into. So it faces a different way for the NTSC one. And he took that out and he told me that the reduction in heat was negligible.
Oh, now, really?
Now, that makes sense when you think about it, because it's driving 240 volts, not 110.
Mm-hmm.
So you're instantly getting, you're still going to get a lot more heat because you've got more power going through it. So again, when it comes to the Saturn stuff, I mean, obviously, Tom, you know, from Dreamcast Junkyard, I did give him my, you know, PAL Sega Saturn PSU, which has hardly been used. Your Saturn's not parts, Tom. It'll last forever. You're absolutely fine, mate. But it was interesting that Simon said that, you know, that he kind of advocates in replacing the PSU on the Saturn. As you alluded to, their video corruption. You know, there's loads of different kind of wee bits and bobs that could be capacitors. The Saturn, regardless of region, you know yourself, mate, it's notoriously tanky. It's not, I'm sure it was even, was it Simon again I seen a thread? Was he talking to me privately? I'm sure he was telling me privately that he's not had an issue where he's actually seen a Saturn being destroyed by the motherboard being the issue. It was more likely the PSU that had done it.
Yeah.
So the caps on the Saturn, the only place where it's got any of the kind of standard dome electrolytic capacitors is next to the power input. The other ones all around the board are all the kind of smaller Dreamcast style ones, the wee circular silver and black ones that are very flat, and they don't kind of tend to go. So, it's a notoriously tanky system, but again, you can get oxidization on, you know, the power supply pins, you know, the controller port pins, the cartridge slot, as we've talked about. So there's a lot across the piece that you need to look at if you do pick up like a cheap Saturn. That's not working. A lot of the issues are kind of, you can go over them. If it's just a disk drive, it's not working, then you're fine. But again, don't be too overly put off. Again, if you're part of the community and you're active, you can reach out to Simon. I know he's got a big backlog. He must be like, why is this guy tagging me? Everybody who has an issue with Saturn, I go, speak to Simon at Argon. He'll be like, James, fuck off, man. I've got a backlog of 42 laser disc players I need to fix, and you're sending me more work. But the guy's reputation speaks for itself, mate. He's very much our kind of, I think, version of Volta over here. I think he's like, like an American, because audience kind of tend to gravitate towards him for advice. And I definitely, if I have anything to ask, it's Simon I go to.
He's a wizard, mate. He's an absolute wizard. His reputation is well earned. I mean, he did my one, my power. So, and that's purring now. beautiful. So yeah, replace the PSU, or you know, make sure that your PSU. It's stock your PSU in it. If you're not going to replace it, it's in good nick. If you're getting a Japanese system, you'll need that step down converter. Otherwise, you're going to blow it up. I had a brain fart moment a couple of years ago where I plugged in a Japanese AC adapter just straight into a plug converter without a step down, and it went straight away. I was like, all right.
What are you doing?
Because at the time I was like, how does this work? No, this converts that to 5 volts. So the 240 thing doesn't matter, does it? Wrong. I don't know why I thought that. It's a brain fart moment. But I think, yeah, Japanese, obviously the step-down converter, power you won't need it, but then power you'll be at 50 hertz. Everything you play, which you may want to, if you want to be a mainly physical player, if you want to look at the power, restrict yourself to the power market and what you can buy in, you know, the high street and CEX and stuff. I wouldn't recommend that personally, but you know, that's what we grew up with, and that's where we fell in love with the system. So there's an awful lot of stuff there. And again, later on, we'll talk about what games are probably good in the sort of affordable price ranges, and there's some good ones in there. And then there's the US one, which I don't think there's a benefit of getting that over the Japanese, is there? Aside from the fact that it's probably a lot more expensive because they're a lot rarer.
Aye. I mean, another thing as well with the Japanese system, if you were to go for that, and again, we'll go on to ODEs shortly, and if your plan was to buy a Japanese console, and you're kind of thinking, right, I'll buy a Japanese console, and that kind of rules out me having to get the 50-60 hertz switch. But, you know, at the same time, if you do put an ODE in there and run PAL games, you're going to have a slight overscan on any PAL optimized games that you run that didn't come out in Japan. So yeah. One that comes to mind is World Wide Soccer 97. That's got severe overscan on it if you run the PAL version on a 60 hertz modded console or a Japanese native 60 hertz console. So, there's not a lot of kind of major caveats. It's just kind of wee ones, and we're going to do our best to kind of highlight them all to you tonight.
Yeah, we're not going to give anyone any different definitive answers. This is all going to be down to what your individual needs around a Sega Saturn are. Obviously, I mean, we both recommended Japanese consoles. We've both got PAL Saturns, albeit yours is one that, as we know, you've got your long history with, and mine, I've just always had a PAL Saturn since 1996. If I was buying one fresh now, I'd have a Japanese with me. I do have a Japanese one hooked in as well with a Fenrir, but I don't recommend that anyone gets two Saturns.
No,
absolutely not.
No. I mean, if you want to, and you know, you love the look of them, and you've got space in your heart and your home for two Sega Saturns, then by all means, you know.
this one was a very cheap. God, I got this for. It was about £20 off Bayi.
Aye.
Really, yeah, with a bunch of games. And it was boxed as well, which was insane. Boxed in the Christmas Nights gift card box.
Oh, that's beautiful, that set, honestly. Yeah. That's absolutely gorgeous.
It's lovely. And I got it just before I sent Simon my PAL console to get fixed. So I thought £20... just to not be Saturnless for however long it takes to repair my power stock console. And I was thinking of just punting it on, but then I got the Fenrir, and the Fenrir went into the Japanese system. So I thought, well, if Fenrir goes in the Japanese system, CD, Simon freshened up for me, he's in the power system, good to go. But there's various loads of options to allow people to play discs and OD and images without having to have two units set up. It's just a way the cards fell for me.
the way the cookie crumbled, as they say. But I mean, as well as when we're talking about the consoles, within each of those kind of regional SKUs, there's also, you know, variants between those as well. So the Japanese one, now again, when it comes to ODEs, one in particular, you did have to watch which system version you bought, but since then that's been kind of standardized and that's now not an issue, so that's fine. So that aspect doesn't come into it anymore. But do you want, in the Japanese side, do you want the original Mark One, which is that beautiful gray, you know, Sega Saturn with the blue power and reset buttons, or do you want the more infamous, you know, Sagata Sanshiro one, the white one, again, the Mark Two, which I was never a fan of the Western Mark Two. Like, that was when Sam got, and we used to have a bit of a laugh. He used to say he had the budget Saturn, you know, because that's what he used to call it. He used to call it the budget Saturn, because he's like, oh, you've got your fancy elliptic buttons and your glass front. I've got these two wee round and a wee light that sticks to it.
I originally had the Model 2 in 1996 when I got mine. That's what it came with.
That's what you used to call it, the budget Saturn. I'm like, kind of, calm down, mate. It's a Saturn. It's lovely. But obviously the Japanese version is white, and the kind of the different coloured buttons and the controller that goes with it. On the Western side, the weird thing, and I've never understood why Sega felt they had to do this. I don't know if it was because maybe they felt that the controller was too similar to the Mega Drive in terms of shape, that they felt new system, we have to kind of go completely different. But the Mark One Western console comes with a brand new controller, but the Mark II Western console, PAL and American, comes with a black version of the Japanese Mark One controller, which is by far the more superior and my favourite controller ever. It's just so damn comfortable. Best D-pad, just a great shape to it, a nice size. So again, with the way the ODEs work and whatnot, it really does come down now in terms of aesthetics. Now, I've got a Mark One PAL Saturn with a Mark Two PAL Saturn controller. That's what I use. I don't have the Mark One pad. So again, it all just comes down to now really aesthetic. Do you want the Mark One that's grey if it's Japanese, or do you want the white Mark Two? And then in the Western ones, it's just literally a straight choice which black model you want. You know, do you want the elliptic glass front with the buttons, or do you want the Mark II that's got the kind of round plastic buttons on it?
Yeah, I think beyond that, obviously there is the aesthetics, but I believe the Mark II consoles are certainly cheaper made. Aesthetics is one thing, so you don't have the, you know, as you say, the clear plastic sheen and the disc access light, but the internals as well are progressively cheaper. Now, obviously, a lot of it doesn't really matter an awful lot.
Aye.
Putting the two SH2s onto one chip, etc., and all that sort of stuff is not going to affect you that much. Although, one thing to bear in mind is that certain games do have issues with certain Saturns, Japanese Outrun being one of them.
Oh, right, okay. Right.
If you're looking at retaining your drive as well, the last thing I would say is that, in my experience, Model 2s tend to die a lot faster, and I think that was confirmed on a Sega 16 thread where someone said that, I can't remember who makes the drive, but it said VAO 11 was when they introduced this drive, and that was garbage.
Oh god. Right, okay. I mean, the one you've got, mate, that I gave you, that was out of my Saturn, as I said, you know for a fact that like was used 2 days a week for a year and then went and I left, mate. So you've probably got one of the most brand new drives. I don't think it's even in a machine yet. It's just kind of sitting there. It's a spare, isn't it? So you've got that nice wee kind of back, that lovely backup just sitting there fresh to go whenever you need it. So
it's all sealed up, wrapped in tons of, because my one was going. That's why I needed it, because I was playing Shining Force 3 and I was getting all sorts of disc read errors and all sorts of corruption on the screen from the drive. So I bought your one off you and it ride itself. So I thought, when it does go, I'll swap them over. And then I got it serviced. So, and it's been fine since. But when it does go, I mean, these things, drives aren't going to last forever. So I'll be needing it eventually.
Ah, that's the thing, mate. And it's, I know there's kind of various people in the community that we talk to, the people that have just, you know, freshly picked up a Saturn as well. And the people listening to, I don't want to kind of name names and, you know, when air and all that kind of thing. The people that I speak to privately will know this kind of conversation that I've had with them, you know. But understand, if you pick up a system, right, and that kind of tangibility of holding a physical game and things like that, and, you know, getting up and opening the tray and putting the disc in and things like that. But the sad fact is that anything with a moving part is eventually going to seize up. Now, these drives and lenses were not meant to run for 30, 40, 50 years. Whenever Sega packed these things up brand new and sent them off to shops, I don't think in anybody's mind they thought that the teenagers would still be playing these in their 40s. You know what I mean? But, you know, here we are, that we're still kind of going strong with them. But that's the Achilles heel of any of these disc-based systems, whether it's the OG Xbox, which is notorious for its kind of, this was one model of drive, it's a Thompson drive, which is notoriously bad.
It's fucking shite.
I love the fact that you came off mute to say that. It's like, you know,
off the middle of my coughing fit just to say that it's fucking awful.
Aye. So the Thompson drive and the OG Xbox, the GD-ROM drive, the Dreamcast, notoriously finicky. The Dreamcast, whenever you close its lid, and you actually can hear it going vroom, vroom, and it's actually the lens moves up and down, and there's a little bit of movement. The motor in the middle spins once, and then the lens pops up and down. But over time, and it happened to two that I bought, is that the motor actually starts to go. So whenever you close the drawer over, the lid over, you hear it going, and it's like, oh, Jesus Christ. And the lens clicks as it goes up as well. And I know people have got these massive collections, and if you have got these, like yourself, mate, you're putting a contingency in place. You've got spare drives and spare machines that if you need to fall back on them, you've got it. But you've also backed yourself even further by reducing that wear and tear, by getting the ODE. And then you know, you don't need to pull something off the shelf. You can for nostalgic reasons and put it in a physical drive, but why risk the wear and tear? Stick it on an SD card and off you go.
That's exactly it, mate. And it's the same with, excuse me, it's the same with the EverDrive. I've got the cartridge games for the Mega Drive up there, but again, it's not as susceptible to, you know, falling apart as the disc drives are. But plugging those carts in and out, eventually they're going to wear down. So that's why some of these SD solutions are so good. It's not just so that you can have access to the whole library, but it's also it lets your genuine stuff live a little bit longer.
Aye. And it's, I think as well, I think in the community I've noticed perhaps a wee bit of kind of, I think they're becoming more accepted now. I mean, I've had Fenrir for over two and a half years, because it'll be 3 years come the summer I've had Fenrir. My God, that's flew in. And I think at the start, there was a wee bit of stigma towards them, a bit of kind of elitism and resentment towards them, that, you know, they were taking away the kind of physical aspect. And I know there's a big thing on Twitter that, you know, there's a lot more kind of show than tell. You know, I like to tell, as I said, I've got the memories and they're up here, and that's why I load up kind of bits of gameplay. And it's great to see, we've talked about it, that more people now are starting to show, you know, that kind of gameplay aspect. But you're not in 2023 going to be, trying the best word, excluded from the community if you're running these games on an ODE. They're far more accepted now as an option, you know, for preservation. So, you know, while there is a vast community out there that like to kind of show what they've got on their shelves, what they've just bought, if you're new and you've just picked up a Saturn again and you're trying to kind of maybe get involved in the community and be seen a bit more and get involved in it, don't feel that because you've went the ODE route that you're going to become kind of exiled or ignored. You know, it's, people will still want to see gameplay. More and more people are picking these things up. They're kind of an acceptance as part of the hobby now that going forward, we are going to need these devices.
Yeah. Yeah. And that extends to, you know, you see it a lot more with things like Mr. FPGA and
exactly
all that sort of stuff. So I think people are coming to terms now that collecting is just so expensive. Even if you just want a handful of games, it's getting ridiculous. I think just moving off the console, last two things is obviously the V-Saturn from Victor JVC and the High Saturn. I don't think any budding Saturn, a new Saturn owner should probably be seeking those out. They're lovely, lovely units, especially the High Saturn. But just collector's items now. I mean, if you like them that much that you want to spend the big bucks on them, more power to you if you're able to do that. I'd love one.
Does GD Camaro not have one? He's got a V Saturn. Is it a High Saturn? He's got one of them.
He's got one of them. I can't remember which one he's got.
Oh, I can't remember. He put a tweet out yesterday saying that he was working a night shift and he had everything all set up. He had his pink PS2 set up. He had his Saturn out. I'm trying to see if I can. Blah, what are you doing? Search me on Twitter while recording a.
They are lovely, lovely units.
I can't find the tweet, but he's got one of them, and it's a lovely, lovely machine. But again, if you're new to buying a Saturn in 2023, I don't think that's the kind of particular model, unless the aesthetics really appeal to you, that you need to look at picking up.
Yeah, so Japanese or PAL, if you're over in the UK, if you're in the US, if you're a US listener, you know, I don't think there's too much of a difference between getting a US or a Japanese console. Japanese consoles, because it was so successful, they're much more widespread, a lot more cheaper. So I think the next big question is whether you go digital or physical. So we've touched on this already, mate. I've dabbled with both. You are 100% digital now. Now, I will fight physical's corner a little bit because I do have to. Someone has to on this podcast. Obviously, I do like my physical games.
Really, mate?
Yeah, just a bit.
I just noticed the Sega Powered Panzer Dragoon poster behind you as well. That is lovely stuff.
Yeah, that just came today.
There we go. Ooh, the annual. Great stuff.
Yes, lovely stuff. But, yeah, obviously I like my physical things. I think as we established on the Sega Power podcast, couldn't get the magazine an awful lot, but love that I can get the annual one here. So, yeah, there's just something about picking up a CD, popping it in, even the way that it pops into the drive, the old, and then over the years you just get used to the sound that the drive makes, which is again part of the nostalgia. It's like obviously it sounds awful. It's not as bad as the Dreamcast one. So, no.
But the worst thing is, if the Dreamcast gets into a stride, like Shenmue. I'm like, by the way, the Radio Sega chat right now, Resident SD is probably at this moment typing, loving these disc drive impressions, guys. It's just, I can just imagine it, because every time we either sing or do a system impression, he always comments on it, so.
Oh, God. But yeah, I love that. And the thing is, because I know the sound so well, I know when a CD is going to boot or not, or when it needs a clean or a wipe, or, you know.
Aye.
Which is a bit of a pain sometimes. They won't always work now. The desks are very old, and I've had them since I was a very young teenager. The fact that they've all survived this long is just shows how much I love them, compared to some of the Mega Drive games. but yeah, there's definitely, you know, we as people have this desire to have something. It's just having something physical, there's that desire in there, and that definitely fulfills it. And for even things like picking up the manuals, going through the manuals, it's all lovely stuff. And there's just a lot of, you know, a lot around the casework, the artwork, the disc work, the case. The PAL, we were quite blessed in the PAL region. I thought we had pretty decent box art for our games. You know, the Japanese stuff is still fantastic, obviously. Aww. Still in little jewel cases. The American stuff, I'm really sorry, guys, it really sucks, especially like your Panzer Dragoon case. I don't know what was going on there.
I mean, that's the thing as well, mate. I mean, just very, very quickly going back onto Dreamcast, when I was obviously doing the open menu stuff on the GDMU and putting like NTSC stuff on there, and the assets pack for Open Menu just now doesn't have all of the Japanese artwork. Only certain games have got it, so it's only PAL and NTSCU games that have got full artwork on there. And the American artwork is absolutely diabolical. See the Dreamcast artwork for the two Tomb Raider games? It is shocking.
Yeah.
But the PAL ones are beautiful. Like Last Revelation on the PAL Dreamcast is, it's a gorgeous cover. But the American one looks like some 5-year-old drew it on like the back of a newspaper with a crane. It's just, it's shite. So I literally went through my GDMU and took off all my American ones and put on. So I love the orange swirl, but I love the blue swirl packaging. So it's like a Frankencast. It really is. It's like, you know, it's an orange swirl, the orange UI, but it's got some PAL games and PAL artwork with blue swirls on it, and the word Dreamcast in blue and black. You're like, what are you doing? It's like, aye.
Someone needs to go through and make orange versions of all the PAL artwork.
Oh, there you go. Dreamcast talk, guys. If there's anybody that's on that forum that happens to listen to our little podcast, there you go. But aye, American artwork, the Panzer Dragoon Saga case is absolutely shocking. I mean, we've spoken about it many times. The PAL case, the dual kind of DVD cases, plastic front, nice slips, artwork on the back of each. It's different. Oh, yeah. The box, the slip case, everything about it is absolutely stunning. But the American one's just like standard big case, open it up, two discs, a couple of disc holders with a bit of foam across it to keep it in place. Oh, magic.
Yeah.
it's not great.
Yeah, talking about Panzergoon Saga, that is a very beautiful thing to have, because if you say the artwork on the two slipcases, now I don't recommend that anyone, unless you've got money to burn, goes out and spends 400 quid on Panzergoon Saga. But again, even something like Virtua Fighter 2 with its long box case, huge, chunky, lovely manual, and then the bright blue disc with the silhouettes of the 10 fighters across it, beautiful stuff. So it's all fairly intangible stuff. It's all, you know, you get into digital, whatever. If you're looking for something lovely to see, something lovely to hold, and it's not just about, you know, it's not just about showing it off. It's personal appeal to you.
Aye.
Is, you know, how much you love this sort of stuff. That's why I got the Panzer Dragoon thing on my wall, because I think it looks gorgeous. You know, you know, if you've got an affinity for, you know, game cases, game art, then obviously there'll be something there for you. But on the other hand, there's digital.
Mm. And I mean, just to kind of obviously set the kind of record as well, if I could afford to go back and rebuy, because that's what I said to you before, like I don't call it a collection, because at that time I wasn't collecting. I was just living the system. So I wasn't collecting back then. I was just buying, you know, so...
I don't think of myself as a collector. This is just stuff that I want to play.
That's not a collection. That's just your stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the difference. And it would have been very similar to me. I mean, as I said, I've mentioned before, I'm not going to bore people and go through everything that I had before, but I had a hell of a lot of stuff, Saturn and Dreamcast, PAL and Japanese. And to go back and rebuy these games again, married now, family, responsibilities, you know, there's no way. Like that was the reason that the Panzer Dragoon Saga, its last great purpose for me was justifying a Fenrir, because I said to my wife, we get this mod for my Saturn, it's 100 quid, and it lets me play every game on an SD card, 100 quid. One of the games I want to play is 400 alone. You know, and at that point, it's an easy sell. But what you're saying there, mate, is right in that the artistic approach to it is that it is nice, and especially if you grew up with it. Do I miss being able to touch my copy of Panzer Dragoon Saga? Of course I do. I would love to have it in my hands again, but it's just not feasible. Likewise, all the other kind of Saturn games that I had, it's just not possible for me to go out and rebuy. Like, you messaged me today, Sonic Jam is 40 quid now, mate.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that alone, 40 quid for Sonic Jam, 45, 50 quid for Burning Rangers.
40 quid for Christmas Nights. You're looking at 100, you're looking at three figures for Burning Rangers.
You know, it's just, it's crazy stuff. So, that's why when I got the Saturn back and I was kind of looking at things, and it was actually quite scary even almost 3 years ago to see where the prices were. Nowadays, it's getting worse. So it justifies itself even more now. But back then, that was why I made the decision to go down the digital route. Now, with Dreamcast, I did initially try and had started to build up a decent kind of physical collection before I got the Saturn back. And I had maybe bought, 25, 30 games. I bought Marvel vs. Capcom 2 box from CEX. It came, it was mint, only paid £45. That's 100 notes. You know, so in 2.5 years, 3 years, that's doubled in price. So, you know, the GD-ROM died in that. And at that point, that was the third console I'd bought since 2008 when I sold up over various periods of time. I actually seen one of my Facebook memories from like 2014 or something like that. And it was delighted to have this little console back in my life again. And I'd actually bought a Dreamcast. But after 2 days playing it, I was playing Crazy Taxi, the music stopped, and the message came up at the bottom, disc may be dirty or need cleaned, and the audio stopped, and I was playing Power Stone, I got to the second stage, and it crashed, it wouldn't load anymore, so the drive had started to go. So when this one that I had, that I'd bought these games for, went, I basically went, right, I can either try and find another console and replace that drive, or I can find something more long-lasting. So I sold all the Dreamcast physical games and bought a GDMU. And that story's not as cut and dried as it sounds right there, but that's for another day.
But yeah, that right there is a huge reason just to go digital and to go with the ODE solution. Because yeah, as we hinted at when we were talking about the console hardware, these drives, there is wear and tear. And I think one thing to mention actually is we're talking about having something to hold, having something that's, you know, is beautiful to look at. Another option that kind of flirts between the two, between having, you know, the unofficial ISO and then the obviously official game. In between that, you've obviously got reproductions, and you can get, there are solutions to play those reproductions now. The name of the cart escapes me. Why can't I remember?
Pseudo Saturn Kai.
That's the one, Pseudo Saturn Kai. And obviously there's mod chip solutions, but my advice is buyer beware of those, because no matter how high quality your reproduction is, it still will erode and shorten the life of your drive faster than any official disc will.
And that opinion, I've actually seen red hot Discord disputes on that, like people saying, no, the disc drives are designed to read discs. These are discs. It's no difference. But you're putting basically a CDR that is burned to a non-standard format, and you're forcing the system to read that. So there's clearly, it's out of spec for what the lens was designed to run. So there is going to be additional wear and tear. That much is just common sense. So I know, again, won't name anybody on air, but there's a big fan of the show that's really into his reproductions, and some of the ones he's bought are absolutely gorgeous. His Panzer Dragoon Saga one is great. He showed me photographs of it, but I think he's got the Grandia English translation again, comes in a lovely case and things like that. But as you say, mate, it's just maybe if you're going to use them kind of more sparingly, or because of the price, if you are someone who wants to have something on a shelf, then maybe have them. Know that we're kind of advocating. I hate the idea of games being ornaments. I absolutely detest it. And I've got the big three sitting beside my Saturn as ornaments, but, you know, it's kind of, you hypocrite. But, you know, it's like, Sega-holic, you're a hypocrite. It's, but those are games that I've decided, you know, I've got Virtua Fighter 1, because obviously the history I've got with that game. I've got VF2, Sega Rally speaks for itself, and Virtua Cop, all the big box ones. And they're just there because those are games that are entwined as memories. Like VF1, the game I played on launch day. Sega Rally speaks for itself. Got it in Beatties in January. Virtua Fighter 2, likewise. My uncle, big dafty, didn't realise he'd bought me one of them the week before. So I get Virtua Fighter 2 one week and Sega Rally the next in the same shop. And it was it to be, we got to Partick train station and they went, Didn't I buy you a game last week? You know, and again, Virtua Cop entwined. I got the stunner and the, or the Virtua Gun as it's called here, in the game pack and W. H. Smith's. I never had the chance to own the big box, and I managed to pick up a really good condition copy for CEX. So they're there because of kind of get memories attached to them. But if that's the case and you've got these reproductions and they look nice and maybe you can't afford to go and get back the original and you want to have it sitting there, then they're good for that. But there's always that concern that are they just kind of shortening the life of your disk drive if you run them excessively?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, yeah, we were talking about the physical stuff before, and as you say, you've got those four games because they mean a lot to you, and they are, you know, having them there in the physical form. And I don't think, and I think this is probably what we're going to get onto next, is, you know, the combination of having both physical and digital. But I think some of the benefits, even if you aren't able to play the disc, at least in your head, you own those games. They're not going anywhere. One day, if you've got a drive, you could play them. But at the very least, you know, you're entitled to play those images legally because you do own the actual game.
And that's actually great you've said that, because that was one thing, a point that came to mind as we were talking earlier, but we kind of moved away from it. Obviously, there's the legalities, right? And again, you know, the whole thing about, we don't endorse piracy on the Sega Guys podcast. We do say if you have these images, make sure you do have the games behind you. But, you know, let's cut the shit, right? We know majority of people that do this don't, right? But people get, or if there are people who get quite precious about it, if I go and pay somebody 400 quid for Panzer Dragoon Saga, how much of that is Team Andromeda and Sega going to see?
Exactly, nothing.
The square root of sweet FA. So, you know, that's why I refuse to kind of go into any kind of guilt about it. If a portion of that money went to Sega and Team Andromeda, then fine. But that's another aspect about going digital. I won't fill a collector's pocket full of wads of cash for the sake of nostalgia. I will not do it. Someone who perhaps has got a copy, who's got no affinity with it, who's picked it up because of the rarity, because they see it as a trophy, as a trading card. Nope. I'm not doing that. So I just wanted to kind of touch on that. It was something that came to mind there as well whenever you kind of talk about the legalities, and obviously we know what they are, but let's be honest, you know, the majority of people that are, they're not hard to find, people. Not hard to find. There's a Google search away.
But what so I will far, say...
And so far, Sega haven't been Nintendo.
No. Well, what I will say is there is no way to purchase a translated version of Grandia or Police Nauts or Bulk Slash. And I think that's another benefit of going digital, is the fact that the Sega Saturn community is incredible with their mods and their ROM hacking at the moment. They are, I think they're probably, you know, it's hard to say whether it's out of the Saturn guys on the Mega Drive. I was going to say the Saturn guys are up here and everyone else is down here, but then I remember Final Fight and the Mega Drive and all the crazy stuff that's going on there at the moment. But I think you're doing yourself a disservice these days if you don't have an ODE and you're not able to play some of these translations and mods because they are simply spectacular.
Aye, and that's the thing, mate. I mean, obviously there is kind of like reproductions that are out there of like your kind of your Grandia and your obviously your Bulk Slash and things. But again, they're just a simple case of downloading the patched ROM, put it on your SD card, and away you go. Now, Sega Saturn Shiro podcast on Friday there, I'm sure it was, they had done a show where they were talking about the Stellar Assault English patch for the Saturn. Yeah. So that's another one that's going. They had news as well. Sakura Wars 2. So that's another one. You know, it's absolutely mental. So you've got Grandia, Bulk Slash, Police Nauts, Stellar Assault. You get the Shining Force 3, Scenarios 2 and 3. You know, it's just they're racking up Castlevania Symphony of the Night. They're just as the years are going on, the work is incredible. Please, somebody do Sega Gaga for the Dreamcast. My God.
Yes, that would be the grail. But yeah, I mean, Sakura Wars. I need to make my way through the first Sakura Wars actually, because I've got it on Saturn and Dreamcast, and tried muddling through it and I quite like the tactical parts, but I got no idea what's going on with the dialogue. So I've got to make my way through. I'm going to make my way through the translated Saturn Pass version, and then I'll be moving on to Sekiro Wars 2. But yeah, as I said, mate, the last option is why not have both? And I'm not talking about some dickhead like me having two consoles. There is ways to keep your drive and have access to the ODE. Now, one of those is the Satiator. And we'll come on to the actual, you know, ODEs, the pros and cons of the various solutions in part two.
Yep.
But you also have the Fenrir Switcher, which isn't its own thing. You'll need a Fenrir with it. It came out of nowhere, that one, like last year.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, well, with that, I think originally they only brought it out for 20-pin versions of the Saturn, which is primarily the Mark 1.
Yeah.
And then they said 21-pin coming soon. And I think the 21-pin is out now, and it came along pretty quickly. So that's the kind of only... While the Fenrir has been standardised and has one single board that works on 20 and 21-pin Saturns, if you do go down... And again, we'll get this in more detail. If you do pick up the Switcher to go with it, that's the only time we need to see they did a 20 or 21-pin version, but we will get to that in part two.
Yeah. So, yeah, mate, I think that's a good place to pause for now. And as is has been our tradition for Series 3, we will revert back to our musical Sega jukebox. And today I think we're going to go with Virtua Cop, and this is the Stage 3 theme, Gang Headquarters. Enjoy.
Radio Sega, playing the best Sega music, 24/7.
That was Gang Headquarters. Hope you enjoyed that. Been a while since we had a good old sing song on here, but we digress. ODEs, mate, that's our next topic. So we talked about, you know, the benefits of an ODE, a disk drive. We'll give them both their time in the sun now. We'll talk about, you know, if you want us to go down the physical route, talk about what games you'd recommend to start off with. But first of all, if you go down the ODE route, you've got options. And I think that's probably one of the greatest things about being a Sega Saturn owner right now is there are plenty of options. Three main ODE options. There was two originally, wasn't there? It was Phoebe and Rhea.
Yeah, which was done by, is it Deunin? I can't pronounce the guy's name. I can spell it, but I can't pronounce it. The guy that created GDMU.
Yeah.
He created them, and again, they were very hard to get. The guy's notorious for his release schedules. There's no pre-orders, there's no warning. He just basically turns up and puts them out for sale. If you happen to catch it, good. If you don't, then tough shit. It wasn't ideal. It was very controlled and kind of just too unreliable a way to try and get either the GDMU or the Rare or the Phoebe. So, you know, obviously we have these now kind of very three standardized, dare I say, mass market options to pick from. And it is great. You know, it's like I've got my preference. I've also got my opinions on the other two, which I'm not going to be frightened to share. They will be. Dan's like, oh, jeez, man, come on, don't you? This'll be factual. It's like that. What's his name? What's that boy again? For Wolf of Wall Street and 21 Jump Street. What's his name again? It's like that gif.
Jonah Hill,
that's the one. Like. But aye. No, there's three main options, and we're going to go through each of them. They all vary in price, and they all kind of vary in features as well. One of them, I think, gets very harshly treated, and we'll get into that.
I think so. We ended the last segment talking about keeping both your disk drive and having an ODE solution, and I think it's probably best. I think we'll go through these in order of price, starting with the highest first. And because Dr. Abrasive, you know, has done an awful lot for the Sega Saturn community. And I think it's probably fair to say that none of these three exist without his work.
No. There is a video on YouTube, a very, very good video on, I'm not sure if it's his channel or someone speaking to him, but Professor Abrasive is on there and he's actually talking through the process that he went through at a really, really technical level on how he managed to hack the Saturn's disk copy protection. So none of these exist without his work. Getting down to the specifics, that the way the Saturn works is it used to try and pick up a wobble round the rim of the disk. So if you look at the Saturn disk very closely, right on the edge, there's a wobble, a little wobbly line round the edge, and that's what the Saturn used to look for to basically authenticate the boot process. For him to even clock that, and then he goes into the kind of the way that the Saturn communicates, and then there was a chip. Now I'm not going to try and repeat it one for one because I don't want to kind of butcher. If you want to watch it, we'll put a link in the description. Oh, I've always wanted to say that. and people can check it out because it really is brilliant. He finds this controller chip of some kind that's got its own kind of language in it, and he opens that up and finds out what information and data that it extracts and what it takes in. And it's insane to see the level of the guy's a genius, man. But none of the three work at all without the work that he's put in. So you will never have a bad word to say about Professor Abrasive, even though I do have some criticisms of Satiator as a product.
Well, talking about Satiator generally at first, all of these I would say are plug and play. Satiator is the only one where you won't have to remove your disk drive. So if you've got a Sega Saturn, if you've ever seen a Sega Saturn, if you've not seen a Sega Saturn, there's a little flap at the back that you open up serves two purposes. First of all, that's where your CR20302 battery goes that powers your internal memory. It's also where the video CD card used to go. Beyond that now, that's where the satiator will plug in. You simply slide it into the back of your Sega Saturn, and that's it. It's installed. So ease of use, it's really easy. Even though I would say Fenrir and Mode, very easy to install as well. But satiator, by default, was the easiest to install. So the biggest benefits of it, really, are that you're going to be able to just slot it in and play, and you're going to retain your disk drive without having to stick any extra wires in there. So that's the big selling point behind Satiator. I did say it was the most expensive. Clocks in at $260, translates to about 230 quid. But then if you're in the US, I think you're going to be okay. If you're in a power region, especially if you're in the UK and you're going to be paying tax on that, you're going to be paying an extra 20% on top of that, which is going to be about 50 quid. And you're also going to have to pay your import fees to your courier, shipping as well. It's just going to definitely put this north of about £320 at least when I was looking at getting one.
Aye. Before we came on air, the Satiator is available to buy. Professor Abrasive has them in stock on his website, and I added one to a basket just to see what the shipping options were. And standard shipping was like $55, and like express shipping was $60. There wasn't much between them. So, the time you add the price of the unit, the import tax, VAT, your shipping, it is the most expensive. But as you said, in terms of as a benefit, if you're someone who doesn't fancy the task of opening up a Sega Saturn to mod it, and you want the absolute easiest hassle-free install, literally put your thumb in a wee clip, undo a flap, stick this in, your SD card's inside it, and it's also small enough that I think it's a very similar size to the video CD card in that. Yeah. You can then put the flap back on, so you don't even know it's there. You know, it's not like PSIO? PlayStation 1 OD that it gets in a serial port and literally sits at the back of your, you know, your consoles like that, and this thing sticks up at the back like that. You know, it's, I look like I'm doing an Akira. But so it's very discreet, it's very easy to install, but it's very, very expensive. And again, we're going to give a kind of account, positives and negatives of both, but I don't know if you want to go through the positives of all, then the negatives of them all, or cover them off
We'll cover them off. I mean, say, Shat, I think we've dealt with the positives are obviously in Tokyo, it does what Mode and Femria do, ease of access, obviously, ease of installation. That's the biggest positive. Retaining the CD drive without any additional hardware. And then the next biggest positive. Negatives, we've already talked about the price. Functionality, I've not used one, but speaking to people that have used one, it does seem like you have to hard reboot your Sega Saturn in order to change your ROM, is my understanding. You actually have to go for a full power cycle in order to change which game is loaded up into memory.
Yeah, so I was talking to Carl Lavery, because I think he's got one and he's used one, and what he was saying is that, because the way I picked him up when he replied to me about power cycling to change games, I believe on earlier firmwares that was the case from what Carl told me now, and what I understand it's only now the case for multi-disc games. So it has had an update that, you know, I believe you can go back to the BIOS and change your game without a hard reboot and like a full power cycle. But, you know, if you're playing Panzer Dragoon Saga, for example, when you get to the end of disc one, if you want to play disc two, you need to turn the Saturn off and back on. So, you know, whereas the other options, you can just go back to the menu, pick your next game, and off you go. Another thing that was a kind of mark against its name was that it wasn't compatible with Marvel Super Heroes versus Street Fighter. Now, in October, it did release a patch, finally, which let that work. But on the other two options, that's worked fine for a long time, which is kind of bizarre, given that Professor Abrasive's the guy that hacked the Saturn, but his ODE was the one that didn't work with a major title that worked on the other ones. So it's kind of, must be obviously in different ways that they're picking up the language of the system that had to do with it. So that's been fixed now. So that works absolutely fine. So, aye, it's not as feature rich as the other two, but the big selling point for it is if you already have a massive library of disc based games and you don't kind of want to give them up to go digital and you don't fancy undoing four screws, taking out a ribbon cable and physically removing a disc drive and replacing it, then obviously that's a major benefit that this thing is literally plug and play. The complete definition of plug and play.
Absolutely. Moving on to one that I think claims to be plug and play, and to an extent it really is Mode. That's the next most expensive one. Retails for €202, it's about 179 quid. I didn't look at what sort of import it is to bring it into the UK. I know Mode is actually quite popular in the US as well. So I'm not sure if there's import taxes in that respect going the other way. This one does have quite a few features. You know, we've talked about the Dreamcast chat has eked into this episode, and it's going to continue to do so because Mode not only works on your Model 1 and Model 2 Sega Saturn, it will also work on any version of the Dreamcast, which, you know, as we know, GDMU doesn't work on certain models of Dreamcast. Good benefit there. The other benefits that Mode gives you is you can actually use a variety of storage options. So you can have a USB stick, you can have your SD card like you do with the other devices. I think I've even heard of people sticking hard drives in it.
Yeah, yep. It supports hard drives and SSDs as well, mate. So you've got a full kind of spread of options for how you want to store your games. Excuse me. Mode is definitely excuse me, geez, I'm as bad as you. You were coughing in the first half. I've got the flu by proxy. But the thing as well, just one wee thing to point out is that, you know, GDMU out the box. Now, on again various Reddit forums, I've seen kind of people batting back and forth that the GDMU will work in a VAO Dreamcast. And people say that because you've got a 5 volts versus a 3.3 volt in the VA1, that you could cook the GDMU. And it's not instant. It's not like you would turn it on and it would go poof, like without a step-down transformer, but it could be over like prolonged use that you could wear it out. But there is now a mod for the VAO motherboard, that's a capacitor mod, that you can actually mod your VAO motherboard so that the GDMU doesn't get affected by it. It's either like a capacitor or a voltage modification mod that you can do. It's a kit you can buy, but again, that's quite advanced. You know, it's that's not something that the everyday user is going to pick up and do. So, yeah. The mode markets itself and its main feature as works in both Saturn and Dreamcast, but it's a big bit of kit. It's the biggest kind of ODE. It's got a slot for a hard drive, so you'd expect that, but this isn't like a cartridge that you could just to say it works with both and advertise it as a feature is kind of misleading because it's not something you're going to sit and interchange.
Yeah.
You know, and as you said, we were kind of discussed this before we hit record, unless you're going to sit there with your sat in the Dreamcast with the lids off permanently and just, you know, unplug them. You know, it's like, you know, taps off. As I say, when the good weather comes out in Glasgow, it's, you know, taps off. It's not as kind of user friendly in that regard as they kind of make it to be, but it's got 100% compatibility with all Saturn and Dreamcast games. It's got advanced cover art, it's plug and play, no soldering required, you know. And it's got a plethora of storage options that you can choose from.
Yeah. So all round, pretty decent. But again, the second most expensive option and the third and least most expensive option is obviously the Fenrir, which we both have. This is €110, 97 quid. I got mine. Shipping, I think, was about a tenner.
That's
I didn't
right,
pay
yeah.
any. Didn't pay any import fees. Came quickly. the benefits of this are obviously the price. It's at least, it's, you know, less than half the price of the Satiator, almost half the price of the Mode. Regular updates now. Seems like SED is always providing regular updates. Compatibility, I think we're almost there, aren't we?
Yeah, pretty much. I think there's certain games which have got maybe looking at loading issues. I think bug comes to mind. But what SED has built in is that when you're on the Fenrir menu, you press A to launch a game. Certain games that have got any kind of issues, again, I think bug comes to mind, is that you press X rather than A. X takes you back to the Saturn BIOS and loads that ROM into memory. And then you press start to boot it as if you had put the disk in. So it's like a kind of, SED calls it a clean boot.
Yeah.
So there's that aspect that you can do that. So anything I've run and that I've tried to run, whether it's, you know, fan mods, translations, any region of game, you know, it region switches on the fly. You don't even go and change your region, anything like that. It's played everything flawlessly, and it played Marvel Super Heroes versus Street Fighter for day one, you know, yeah. 2.5 years ago. So, I think the Fenrir gets, and I'm not just going to sit on here and defend it because I don't want people to think, oh, you've bought that, so you're just going to back it. I think if you've got a product, you're going to be passionate about it, but I think Fenrir, as ODEs are getting more coverage, I think gets overlooked because of its price. I think people see it as the kind of the shitty option, the cheap option, and it does it a lot of disservice. It's easy to install. Again, not as easy as Satiator. It's not plug and play in that regard, but you know, it's four screws to take the top off your Saturn. If you've got a Mark 1 V8O, be careful when you lift the lid because the reset and power buttons are linked actually from the top of the shell onto the motherboard, so you need to, and you lift it carefully towards you, have a keek round, rotate it, flip it back and rest the top half of the shell on something, you know, disconnect those two so you can access the bottom of the board if you want to. If you've got a VAO, your power supply will be on the top underside of your upper lid. It won't be down on the bottom like most of them. You literally undo a screw holding a kind of little ribbon that holds a screw and the drive in. You take that out, it lifts off the four pegs, you set it aside, put your Fenrir, which has got two holes in it and a little mount at the back. You set that, if the front two holes of the Fenrir go on the front two pegs on the Saturn where the drive sat, stand sits behind it, ribbon cable in, motherboard connection cable in, done. It's as simple as that. It's not a difficult install, but again, it does require you to open your system, but it's certainly not, because of its price, inferior. And what is amazing about the Fenrir is the Wi-Fi module. Now, people don't talk about this enough. You know, SED's got a Discord where he's really active, he engages with his buyers, you know, provides beta software, engages with the community who try it out, bug fixes, anything like that. The Wi-Fi module, when I last spoke to him, is that because you're limited by the SD card size, what he wants to do is enable this to let you stream games to your Fenrir on your Saturn from your PC. So you get to basically use your PC as like a media center full of Saturn games and stream them onto your Fenrir. Now, that's, neither of the other two have got anything like that. You know, that's, now people might be going, well, is that really, why would you do that? Now, I personally don't have a use for that, but I've only got 128 gig card in my Saturn, and I've got everything on it I could possibly want. But as more and more fan translations come, you know, there might be other stuff in the Japanese library that we come across through other videos. Maybe Sega Lord X will highlight something. Saturn Shiro might highlight something. You try it out. Yeah. All of a sudden, you're sitting there going, I need a bigger card. Just stream it across.
We're going to need a bigger card.
So, that's the kind of... And I know it probably sounds like I'm trying to kind of do a sales pitch, and I really am not, but I get irked whenever I see like kind of gaming sites that go, you know, oh, buy this version or buy that, you know, and they instantly go to the Mode and the Satiator because I think they've got more cool points attached to them.
Yeah, I think for me, it sometimes seems like they've got the prestige for some reason. And it feels like the mode is treated like, so the Fenrir and the Satiator are the, obviously, mode is the Terrorunion product. And that's like the Mega SD. And Satiator is like the Crix Mega Everdrive. And the Fenrir, by comparison, is treated like the AliExpress Everdrive car.
Exactly. Where,
you know, it does, neither do a bad job. But the thing with the Fenrir is it isn't a clone device. It's actually the real thing. And it's very well supported with a very vocal community and a very, you know, the said, as you say, it's very, very active in, Discord and in social media. And is always providing updates. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's been that long since you've had yours, but in the time that you've had yours, we've seen back then it was 20 pin only. Then we had the 21 pin. Now we've got the dual version. There's been all sorts of updates. You can add your cover art to it. So the rate of progress has been absolutely insane. Who knows what comes next? So that's definitely what it has going for it. And I think it's very unfair for people to overlook it the way that they do. It does almost everything the mode does. Grind, it doesn't have the same storage options. You can't put it in your Dreamcast. But as a Saturn-specific device, it's hard to argue against the price versus the benefit. As I say, I've got one, and I've loved every minute of it. Especially, you know, playing games that I could never afford, like Street Fighter Zero 3, playing those fan translations, as I said, Sakura Wars, Grandia are ones that I've played. They're fantastic. So, yeah, I don't think you can go wrong with any of these. And I don't think I can go out there and recommend one. Obviously, we've both got the Fenrir and both speak very highly of it. But hopefully the information there now is for our listeners to make their decision based on the information that we've given them. But one last thing to mention about the Fenrir, and it goes back to what we talked about before about why not both, is the switcher module. We said one of the big benefits associated is being able to retain your disk drive while also having the SD solution. Fenrir does that have that as well. It's going to cost you another £45 to put the module in. It looks, from the outside in, it looks a little bit messy.
Aye, it's not the cleanest mod, and it does require soldering of one wire, so it does require soldering skills. But again, if you do have those soldering skills or know someone who does, for the 100 quid, 110 quid including shipping, plus 45, you're getting the same experience in terms of when the lid's on and it's all powered on, same experience. You've got an ODE and a disk drive for less than half of what a Satiator would cost to import to the UK. Yeah. So, you know, it's about weighing up what way you want to play your Saturn. And as I've said to people through DM and on the kind of main timeline, is that if you're just picking up a Saturn just now, before you start going out, and I know it's easy for the romantic aspect to kick in and you want to get these games again, and it's so easily done to go out and just kind of buy this and buy that. If you find that you're starting to eke into spending 40, 50, 60 quid a game and you've just picked a Saturn up and you're looking at your shelf and you've only got three or four games, but they're a couple of cheap ones and a really pricey one, like, in your mind, and if you're looking at it, try and kind of maybe rationalise it. Whenever you get this ODE in, like, are you going to gravitate towards discs once you get used to the convenience of just, like, it's like having a Saturn Series X kind of thing, you know. It's like you've got the everything's all built in, you know, or a Series S. It's like there's no disk drive in there. It's just a internal storage full of games. Just sit there and reset and pick another one for your couch, you know. It's like, this is brilliant. And I have said that to people that are kind of humming and hawing. See, when you do get used to it, I guarantee that the want to kind of get up and put a disk in will fade a little. You will kind of find yourself going, I've literally got what I need and what I want on tap. But it's, again, I do understand again, the way the community is, the way people interact and kind of, I've got this. And people naturally, if they're excited about something that they love, they want to kind of show it off and share it in the community, and that's fine. But just kind of maybe take a step back for a second and think and assess, right, going forward, do I want to play the Saturn or do I want to pay through the nose for the Saturn? And I think it just depends. If you get pockets deep enough to pay through the nose, power to you. I don't.
No, I mean, digital convenience.
I've just been hit with a charge back for a Mega Drive Mini 2, mate. I certainly can't.
But digital convenience is a massive thing, though, mate. I mean, I love my physical games, and I've got tangent here. You know, I've got Sonic Frontiers. I pre-ordered it, got the disc version. Ended up taking the Series X because obviously the Series X is in the living room. It's not in here in the office where the retro stuff is. Took the Series X to the bedroom a couple of nights so I could play it because I couldn't play the disc in the Series S, which was in the bedroom. Finished that, moved on to God of War. God of War took me, I only finished God of War last night at the time of recording. Thought it was really disappointing, but we won't go into that. For Christmas, open up my presents. Mum's got me a T-shirt. Open up a T-shirt. Elden Ring drops out. And I've dismissed Elden Ring as it's just another Dark Souls. I love Dark Souls. Love its bits, but just like, oh, not in a rush to get it. Anyway, got it, put it in. In love with it instantly. I absolutely adore it. And for it to topple Sonic Frontiers in my game of the year last year, it's really special. But same problem. It's a disc. Put it in the Series X. Fine, but I can't play it on the Series S. So I traded my Series X, my Series S, with my youngest daughter because she wants to play Slime Rancher 2 and Goat Simulator 3, which she can't on her Xbox One. So now I've got the old Xbox One VCR in the bedroom, too big for the for the side, so I can put Sonic Frontiers and Elden Ring discs in it.
Bloody hell, man.
And that's me thinking, if I had these digitally, I wouldn't have to do this.
Oh, man. Honestly, that's a juggle and a half, that, mate.
Yeah. She's happy as Larry. She's got a Series S in her bedroom out of this.
You want her? She's probably found bits of dust that she never knew existed after picking up the VCR.
Well, that was the thing. I picked it up and took it out, and before I put the Series S down, I was like, whoa, a bit of dust behind there. But even if you put it down, it'd still be this huge dust blanket that it's sitting on that you didn't see before. But yeah, there's a lot to be said for that convenience. But I will say, again, it depends on everyone's position. Even though I've got everything, there's a lot of stuff that I've got duplicated on my Fenrir, on my Japanese Saturn, but I will always gravitate towards the disc. Just because of the whole experience and the nostalgia, as I said, the popping of the disc, the whole sound and everything, that's just how I'll go. I mean, at the moment, I'm playing my PS3 with a wired 360 pad. You know, if I was playing in the living room or playing somewhere else, so it would have to be wireless, but I don't know, it's just...
I mean, I'm not going to lie, mate, sometimes just for the kick of it, just to hear the sound, I'll open up my Saturn or Dreamcast disc tray and just shut them again. You know,
they make a lovely sound. Here's the Dreamcast one, it's right next to my mic.
Click. That's a meaty hinge that's on the Dreamcast, by the way. It really is.
It really is. But then, talking of physical games, mate, so we focus on the ODEs for a bit now. We said that we'd recommend some games, so I pulled a little list together. A few categories in here. We're not going to dive too deep into these because I think if we started talking about these games in depth, we'll probably start talking about them forever. I mean, the list goes: Virtua Fighter 2 for a fiver, can't go wrong there. Sega Rally, £4. You know, as I said, we could really get into these, but we'll carry on. Virtua Cop 2. £10. Tomb Raider, £8. Virtua Fighter 1, £8. Daytona USA, it's the original one. That's £10. Manx TT Superbike, £6. Sega Worldwide Soccer 97, £3 for our World Cup winner.
£3.
for the greatest football game ever made. Fighting Vipers, £8. Athlete Kings, £12. So a little bit over the £10, you know, limit there, but still cheap enough. I mean, we've talked about how, you know, Saturn prices have got a little bit out of control, but that's not a little bad little collection there, is it?
That would certainly keep you going if you're new to it. I mean, if your plan is just to buy a Saturn and just run it stock, you know, that's something we've not kind of touched on. We've touched on kind of from the off if you were buying one and then went down the kind of modding route. But if your plan is just to buy a Saturn and just enjoy it as it is, vanilla experience, you don't care about the PSU, disk drive works, you're happy with it, then that's a really nice collection of games to get you going.
You know what I mean? Especially, you know, arcade-style games that the Saturn excelled at. Some absolute classics there, some that we've talked about at length on more than one occasion. I mean, obviously the Sega Rally and Virtua Fighter 2 for less than a tenner for both of them. Obviously, Virtua Cop 1 we'll come on to in a little bit, but Virtua Cop 2 you got in there for a tenner, so almost the big three there. I did say another few cheap games, not quite classics, not essentials, but you know, the Saturn version of Wipeout is £8, decent version of that. Thunderhawk 2, I know you, like me, is a big fan of Firestorm. Thunderhawk 2, you're off course, back left.
It's ingrained into us. They must have had a special deal with Dixon's back in the day, because that game was in every bundle that you could ever buy a Saturn with, honestly, God.
Yeah, it was superb, though. Touring Car is a tenner. I mean, even if you're just going to listen to the soundtrack. But there's still a semi-decent racing game in there. Command & Conquer for £8. Soviet Strike for a tenner. I mean, they're not gonna change the world. They're available in some cases on other platforms, but still decent. Again, Saturn games can be affordable. There's a few others, you know, Euro 96 is a few quid. Mostly football games, you want actual Soccer Club Edition, all that sort of stuff. That's all fairly affordable. Next section I've got is essentials, but a little pricier. Now, I was saying on Twitter the other day that as a general rule, I never spend over £40
in some
excess. In three exceptions, and two of those were only just over 40. I rarely ever go over 20. I'm usually looking around. I've got a saved eBay search, which is games under £2.
I thought we were going to say 20.
No, it's a game under £2.
mate, you're like getting back to my days of going to the micro shop and partying with my £2 pocket money to buy a Spectrum, a bargain bin, or a, what was it called again? Was it the Hit Squad?
Yeah, the Hit Remember Squad.
The Hit Squad, £1.99.
I've got a few of those. I've got two bin on the Commodore 64.
Man, remember that, the Hit Squad?
Yeah, well, you get some decent games on there. I've had a few. I mean, I picked up American Pro Trucker from Computer Exchange for £2.50 today for the PS2. But
there you go, mate.
You get a few winners. But yeah, these ones are around the £40 mark. But you know, I've said that they're essential. So I've got Virtua Cop there. You know, the last of the big three. The original Panzer Dragoon is £35 now, which again, it's pretty pricey. But you're getting a stalwart of the Saturn library there, an absolute classic. Daytona CCE, that's £12. Probably not that essential, coming to think of it, but not badly priced. Sonic R is £35. Again, that's gone up quite a bit. Panzer Dragoon 2 seems to have topped out at £45. Again, I love that game so much. I couldn't recommend it enough. So just about fits this category. Street Fighter Alpha 2, we've talked about again a lot. Again, that's crept up to £30 now.
Street Fighter Alpha 2.
We'll call it Street Fighter Alpha 2.
No, I can't.
For free!
With some goddamn moron. By the way, absolute bonus points to anybody who gets where those references of came from.
Yeah, yeah. If you know what film that's from, answers in the comments below.
Aye, comments for where that's from, and if you're listening in Radio Sega on the Monday night, I want it in the Discord, right? Where's that from? I'll be there. I'm there every time, every Monday. I'm always in the comments, so I'll be there. I want to know who gets where that reference comes from. Bonus points if you get it.
Oh, so round of the last two I got in here is Virtue One. Has crept right up to £22.
So on the move.
And Nights into Dreams. And this was for, I didn't look at the long box version, but the dual CD case that came with the Frida controller is £25 on its own. So you're starting to see some of those prices creep up now.
Wait. Nights, the full game in a jewel case is 25.
Yeah.
Christmas Nights in a cardboard box is 40.
Apparently so. We were only talking about the £40 for Christmas Nights on CEX. We were only talking on the demo pod about, you know, if you could go back in time with those stacks of discs at Dixon's, you know, go in there. 2023, these will be worth £40 each.
So, check this to CEX. I can buy myself 300 quid of shitty DVDs at a pound each.
Unreal, mate. Unreal. And then I just thought, you know, just generally talking about certain prices, there's some absolute classics that, you know, I think you and I would love everyone to play. Your Guardian Heroes, your Dragon Force, Shine on the Holy Ark, Pandragoon Saga. But I think we've already said how when you get into Guardian Heroes, you're looking at £90. Sam Bomberman, £70. Burning Rangers, £100. That's where the barrier really starts to reveal itself.
Yeah, there's a kind of a decent. I think obviously you're kind of more mainstream, you know, games that were kind of readily printed off and available, but I think with the Burning Rangers, again, it was one of the last kind of PAL games released, so the run wasn't that great, so I think that's reflected in the price. Burning Rangers, I think, is also just going to eventually just... you give Burning Rangers another couple of years, you'll be looking at the 150 mark.
Yeah, it's sad, really, because, yeah, if you were picking up a sound just to play the disc streams, you get a decent selection there. You got a great little selection if you didn't want to break the bank. But I think you kind of top out at Panzergoon 2, because beyond that, you're looking at some pretty steep prices, which is a real shame, because there's, especially, you know, as I said, some of the RPGs from that era are my favourites. I said before, Shine the Holy Ark, Dragon Force, Shining Force 3, love them all, but you're going to be looking at about £400 for all of them.
Which
is ridiculous. And then Panzergoon Saga is £400 on its own. Saturn Bomberman, House of the Dead is £90. It's,
again, one of the last wave PAL games.
Yeah.
You know, unbelievable.
It is. So again, going back to what we said, if you can, look into those ODEs, because that way money isn't the object that's going to be blocking you off from playing some of these classics.
At the end of the day, mate, everybody deserves to play them.
Yeah,
you know, that is the annoying thing, is that the way things are going, I mean, I would love this bubble to burst, because people who are maybe coming back to the console after being away for maybe 20, 30 years, as it'll be next year, and want to kind of come back to it and aren't aware of they maybe come in and they start looking at like your Sega Rallies and Virtua Fighters and go, oh, the games are still £4 or £5. And it's not until they dig a bit deeper and then all of a sudden you're looking, oh, holy shit, £100 for Burning Rangers, yeah. £90 for House of the Dead. You start to all of a sudden, you get a bit of a shock. So it's not fair that the barrier to entry is just going up and up and up in terms of kind of exploring the full library. So that's exactly why we're doing this, to kind of try and educate and help people.
It is. I thought, just before we end off, mate, so just touching on peripherals, Action Replay or 4 MB RAM card, I think, is essential. Whether you're going to use your display system to play region-free games, whether you're going to play, you know, the 4 MB enhanced games, again, they go for a pretty penny these days. Whether you want to use it with your RAM card, with your ODE, again, I think the 4 MB RAM card, you know, following the episode that, as the time of recording, has just gone live, fairly essential there. Next, the 3D controller.
That's creeping up as well.
Creeping up, yeah. I think you're looking between £40 and £60, depending where you buy them these days. But vastly underrated controller. I think it's very much needed for games like Knights into Dreams, Burning Rangers.
Yeah.
Touring
car.
Yeah, touring car for definite. Manx TT, even though Jason is some sort of wizard with the D-pad. I'll tell you what, Jason, I want to see you. I want Shockers about a touring car, even though I'm absolutely useless at it. I want to see Jason do his D-pad wizardry and take a touring car championship.
Mate, if Jason masters touring car, in fact, see now we've said that, knowing Jason as I do, right? Talk to Jason pretty much. I talk to Jason every day, like I talk to you every day, like apart, like away from Twitter, like you and Jason are just like the two guys I talk to all the time. And like, knowing Jason as I do, even without a Sharka challenge, now we've laid that down to him, mate. He's that character that he'll take that on as a challenge, and he'll probably send me videos that his good lady will record of him playing it. I mean, that Max TT video is brilliant, the big cheesy grin in his face. He's just delighted with himself, and rightly so. It's a great lap time, but I think, Jason, go on touring car with a D-pad, mate. I have absolutely no doubts that you'll probably destroy it.
Yeah, so,
bye, guy.
So, 3D controller, essential unless you're Jason. I've got stuff on here like the Virtual One Twin Stick, dot essential, but a lovely bit of kit.
I'd love to get one of those.
The last two are the light gun and the mouse, which I thought would segue into our last segment. But the light gun, obviously, you're going to need a CRT for that. I love my light gun games. That was the biggest driver behind me getting a CRT years and years ago now. So I couldn't be without my Sega Stunner. But if you are going to go and try the digital route, a lot of the light gun games do support the shuttle mouse. Even though I don't think it got an official PAL release, you can get the Japanese one fairly cheaply. But then that leads us to the last piece, mate, which is display options. So, obviously, CRT via a SCART cable or via your RCA leads, that's one solution, but you'll need your big bulky set. But obviously, there's a plethora of ways for gamers to connect their Saturns via HDMI now, and I think you're pretty well versed in them now, aren't you?
And it's over to James. I think I've had a fair few of them. Obviously, you've got your kind of high end stuff like your OSSCs, all the way down to your very kind of bog standard wee black Amazon box SCART to HDMI adapter. Now, again, there's kind of big retro channels that test all these different solutions out and say this one introduces this many frames of lag and this one has this many frames of lag. The ones I've used, I've never felt like I've pressed something that's took ages to happen. But as I said before, I'm not going to shit on anybody for their choice. Much like the ODEs, in terms of the display options, there is an option for every budget. If you want to go out and spend hundreds on an OSSC, power to you. If you want to kind of go in the mid-range, you know, fair play to you. If you want to go for the budget entry level and you just want to have it on your telly, no frills, don't care about aspect ratio, any kind of shimmering jaggies, whatever, that's fine. I've had the Hyperkin HDMI, which the issue with that is that the audio channels were flipped, but I feel like I'm doing Doctor Strange here. You know, a Minority Report, dragging things about. But, you know, I had two Hyperkins. One developed issues where the video lead became really loose. So if you just tapped anywhere near, like the box, the rescaler box in the middle of the kind of the two cables, that it would flicker. It would go kind of yellow, green, red. I'd have to kind of twist it to get it to reconnect. Had opened it up, looked at the solder joints, couldn't find anything wrong with it. The next one I got as a replacement that had audio issues. So it was just a case of I'd spent £25 on each of them. That took me £50. Then Jason had mentioned he got a Rad 2X from Retro Gaming Cables. They were up for pre-order. I've mentioned before, obviously, it was on my bus to the hotel in Lanzarote and the email came through saying they were available for pre-order. I'm sitting in a transfer shuttle bus pre-order a Saturn cable. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, none. I'm just looking at the map to see how far we are from the hotel. You lying bastard. But and that's where I've went now. Now the Rad 2X is great in that shipped, including VAT, it's £65. There are can obviously pre-orders that go up for that. Keep an eye on Retro Gaming Cables, you know, for the pre-order notifications for that. The great thing with that is it doesn't have a external USB power supply, so there's a micro USB port on it. Some models of Saturn will require you to plug in an external power supply, like the Hyperkin did. You had to have a micro USB to main USB iPhone plug into the main to power it. Wouldn't work without it. Rad 2X works off the Saturn. It draws power from the Saturn, self-powered. Don't have that flyaway cable. I've got a VAO. I expected to have to use that. I asked Retro Gaming Cables to leave the cutout for the micro USB open, not to cover it off in case. Very happy, didn't need to use it. So that's a bonus on that. It also has a button for smoothing, which kind of takes away that kind of rough edge that you get. If you put a retro console through modern TVs, it kind of accentuates the jaggies. So you've obviously, your CRTs get that nice kind of smoothness to it, this the kind of lines and the fuzziness, that beautiful kind of phosphor glow on the CRT screen does its work. So you don't have that on a large panel or a monitor. So this smoothing button kind of does enough of a job to kind of take the roughness off the edges. I find it works great for the 2D games personally, as well as the 3D ones. Some people don't like them on the 2D games, but I think it does do a great job on them as well, because the fighters seem to be jaggier edged in the background art. So again, it helps to smooth things off. So there's plenty out there. If you've just got a basic Saturn RGB SCART, you plug it into this weekend of £8-9 box, HDMI on the other end, power supply in, does the job. Whichever budget you have, if you're not fussy, if you don't notice any kind of latency, the Rad 2X is absolutely no latency. Again, compared to the Hyperkin, I hadn't noticed anything apart from on the 2D fighting games. I didn't find that my time on Sega Rally was out with the Hyperkin. Like, I was fine playing it. When I got the Rad 2X, where I really felt it was the Capcom games. Like, I'm doing like the Hadoukens and the Hurricane Kicks. And I'm going, oh, that's responsive. That is more responsive. But yeah. Sega Rally, VF2, all those, I didn't feel any difference. So there's a plethora of options for every budget. Again, we're happy to help. DM us, we'll point in the right direction if you want to see any of them. The only kind of caveat with going down an HDMI solution, you're using it on a modern telly, you don't get the light gun support. And that's where that's what I miss. Because as much as I enjoy playing Virtua Cop with a controller for the kind of nostalgic aspect, I played it back in the day with that Virtua gun, that lovely bright blue Virtua gun. I would quite happily pick up a wee 14-16 inch CRT to sit in the corner if I could, just for that. But then it'd be a case of unplugging the Rad 2X, putting in a SCART cable. These consoles are old. I don't want to be disconnecting and reconnecting AV solutions often for the sake of one game. So I'm admitting defeat on that one, unfortunately.
Yeah, they're not a wholly practical. I mean, I had to fight tooth for nail to keep mine. The missus hates it. She absolutely hates it because it's a gigantic. It's not what I say it's gigantic. It's only about a 21 inch. But obviously, you know.
After, that's what she said.
after what is it? After 15 or maybe more years, how long we had flat panels for now? How long have they been mainstream?
I think I work. Early 2000s, wasn't it, really?
Yeah.
Because whenever the 360 came out, there was a big push towards the kind of the 720p sets, the HD ready badge in the corner, remember? So, heading up for about 20 odd years now, almost. Yeah,
so after that long, getting one of these things out with the back's longer than the faces.
That's it, mate. They are quite kind of unsightly, but. You know, again, they're kind of part of that totally genuine experience, if that's what you're aiming for. So,
yeah, again. I think it was when I bought it and played a few light gun games on it. Wife told me it has to go away, so it went away in the old house in the eaves cupboard, like right at the back. And then it happened to be when I bought a PC Engine. And Simon fixed it for me, but it wasn't working on the display. So he said, try it on. Have you got a CRT? So I tried to get it out. So he's like, try this. And the PC Engine didn't work. and I had to send it back to Simon. But he said, is it the set? Is the set working if it's been away for a while? So I actually plugged the SNES into it and started playing Super Metroid, which I'd been playing on a flat panel before that. And I was just like, yeah, this ain't going away now. This looks absolutely glorious. <Let's see what laughs> And it stayed out. But, you know, listeners, viewers, whatever suits you, not everyone wants a gigantic. I say, again, it's not a huge screen. It's just a huge thing.
It's the bulk at the back for the tube.
That's it. You know? It's huge and it's heavy. When you get one, decide where you're going to put it and leave it there.
Aye. And I think that's what it comes down to as well, mate, is that, see, we've obviously went through the console types, the ODEs, benefits, the downfalls, displays, peripherals, but all we're doing here is trying to kind of encapsulate a lot of information based on questions we see on Twitter, and hopefully some people find this useful. But at the end of the day, no matter what region of console you use, what ODE you use, whether you go with discs, whether you go with digital, CRT, HDMI, whatever HDMI solution you choose, if you enjoy it, that's what it matters. There is no right or wrong way of doing this.
Absolutely. If people come to us and ask us what we recommend, and it really is down to you, how you want to play your Sega Saturn, whether you want to collect, whether you want to just play the full library, whether you want to play the hacks, whether you want to play at 50 hertz, 60 hertz, what's important to you, that's what matters. So hopefully, listeners, viewers, this has been informative. This has helped answer a few questions. Please let us know if it has been helpful, if it's helped you make a decision, or if you think we're full of shit.
If you do, be kind.
Be kind, please. But no, please, though, as ever, if you're making it through to the end of this podcast or the end of this video, thanks always for sticking with us. We've got so much planned for 2023. We really are so blown away by all the support we're getting. Please reach out to us, you know, like and subscribe on YouTube, drop a comment below, reach out to us on Twitter. You can catch me at swoop_D. You can catch James at the Segaholic. Catch the account at Sega Guys. But until next time, stay retro, love your Saturn, stay Sega, and we will see you on the Sega side.
Sega!
Have a blast, man!